Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all.
Welcome to our 342nd program of Think Again. Think Again is a program of Borderlands Cooperative, a social change organisation operating for over 28 years. I'm Jennifer Burrell, your host today. We're broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Today we're joined by Noor Salman, who is going to tell us about a new report about anti-Palestinian racism happening right here in Australia. Welcome to the program, Noor.
Thank you, Jennifer.
It's a real pleasure to have you. Firstly, can you tell us a bit about the recent preliminary anti-Palestinian racism report? Why is this research being conducted in the first place, and who's behind it?
Thanks for the great question. So I just first want to acknowledge that I'm speaking to you from Cammeraygal people's lands of the Darug Nation. Mm-hmm. And it's important to know that these lands were unceded. To answer your question, so the Australia-Palestine Advocacy Network launched the Anti-Palestinian Racism Register back in November of 2025. And the main reason was to assess the prevalence and impact of anti-Palestinian racism, not only on the Palestinian community, but those perceived to be Palestinians and allies across this continent. So the National Register was developed also following the findings of the egregious and harmful racism of anti-Palestinian racism in Australian schools, which we also launched a report back in September 2025.
I guess what I'd like to know, what's your role? And also maybe tell us a little bit about your own background. For example, do you have a family connection with Palestine?
Yes, I do. So I'm a Palestinian woman. My family, my paternal side of the family, experienced the Nakba in 1948, where our village was destroyed and multiple residents and Palestinians, indigenous Palestinians to the land, were expelled. And then my maternal side experienced the Nakba of 1967, and we also experienced dispossession and ethnic cleansing then. In terms of my role, I'm currently the Anti-Palestinian Racism Project Lead at APAN, leading the way in developing research and conducting community workshops and education to raise awareness about this really alarming form of racism that we're all experiencing.
Yeah, it's a really invaluable role you're playing. And also APAN, of course, which is Australian Palestine Advocacy Network, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. Thank you for that great introduction and overview. So I think we've all heard the terms Islamophobia and Islamism. Well, my co-broadcaster Jacques and I have explained why we don't really like the term Islamophobia, if people want to listen to the last program. But this report is not about Islamophobia or Islamism or Islamic racism. It's about anti-Palestinian racism. Can you tell us what that means?
Great. Yeah, absolutely. So anti-Palestinian racism refers to any conduct, policies, institutional practices by intent or effect producing an unequal or exclusionary or harmful outcome for Palestinians. It also affects those who support or advocate for human rights, justice, and the liberation and freedom of the Palestinian people. Mm. What it involves is often we're seeing the silencing, the exclusion, the erasure, the stereotypes, defamation, the punishment, and the withholding of rights from or the dehumanizing of Palestinians and or their narratives. And it can often be demonstrated across individual, institutional, and structural formats. We have found that anti-Palestinian racism has evolved or demonstrates multiple patterns. It can include racial vilification. It can include suppression of political, cultural, or community expression. It can include the denial of the Palestinian peoplehood, their identity, their equal rights, or participation in events like we've seen with Rund Abdel Fattah, and now we're witnessing the cultural silencing of Jason Gillam for supporting and speaking about the genocide in Gaza. Now he's, taking courts. And, just overall a differential standard and selective enforcement. So when we're looking at workplaces, that difference there in terms of if someone comes in with a, let's say, a watermelon badge and how their experience is there.
Yeah, it's pretty scarifying too, especially I guess we're seeing widespread across the media that even to put up a sign of being in sympathy or empathy with the people of Palestine or the people of Gaza is actually being dressed up as anti-Semitism, so which is really appalling.
It is absolutely. And here's the thing. Anti-Semitism is a real thing and it's a real harm. But to conflate criticism of a country as Israel that's committing a genocide to be an anti-Semitic act is actually quite dangerous and quite harmful. And for anti-Palestinian racism, that entails recognizing these harmful patterns. It entails that, Palestinians have a deep history to the land. Palestinians are facing silencing, they're facing death and erasure. And for us to be able to speak about that in a critical manner is important for us all.
And as you say, it happens across a range of institutions, and I'd add media to that if we look at...
100%.
Which is 100%. Why we're doing this on this... which is why our motivation to have you on the program, really, just to try to even create some sort of counterbalance where anti-Palestinian racism is being talked about. Mm-hmm. So just to remind our listeners, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Think Again on 3CR, 855 AM on your dial, 3CR digital and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. And today we have on the line Noor Salman, and she's telling us about a recent preliminary anti-Palestinian racism report. So, Noor, getting to the heart of the report, can you tell us about some of the standout findings?
Absolutely. So between the period of November 30th, 2025, to February 28th this year, the Register received 264 incidents of anti-Palestinian racism. That's a three-month period in which we received this many incidents. Mm. The most damning of these findings would be that 65% of the respondents said that this was not their first experience of anti-Palestinian racism, which really goes to show how far-fetched it is impacting people. But what we also found is that 88% of the respondents to the Register were not of Palestinian heritage. Yes, so this cemented the wide-scale impact of anti-Palestinian racism, not only just on the Palestinian community, but the wider community across this continent. And so it kind of made us dig deeper, and the data showed that there were quite alarming incidents being reported with consistent patterns of smearing, defamation, stereotyping and demonization of the Palestinian community and the non-Palestinian community and the allies in the Palestinian movement. Mm. But what we also found was that 8% of the respondents experienced physical attacks and even 5% experienced receiving death threats, which is quite alarming in the grander scale of how deep this form of racism is impacting us and how we need to mitigate it through holistic frameworks.
Yeah, and I did notice, I think, when I read the report, it did stand out to me how many people were not Palestinian. And mm-hmm. I think the report comments too on this is affecting allies, but it's also reflects a lot of people are even too afraid to report. But it had, I think, 17%, let me see, Arab 17%, Palestinian 12% of respondents, Indigenous 6%, Asian, which I think meant Australian Indigenous, 6%, mm-hmm. Asian 4%, Hispanic 2%, Black 2%. And then I looked at the religion. That was really interesting. So 59% identified as Muslim, 33% as Christian, and 5% as Jewish. So, which is really interesting because, of course, the people coming under this anti-Palestinian racism include Jewish people.
Absolutely. And just to, for a correction, it is 8% of respondents that responded as identifying as Jewish.
Oh,
and that's what
sorry.
We mean. Yeah, no, you're all good. Lots of numbers to tackle. So that's what we mean. When we talk about this being far-fetched and impacting us all, we're looking at how it impacts the entire community, no matter what you identify as. We had queer respondents. The majority of respondents also were 63% female, 15% identified as part of the LGBTQI community. And particularly, though, with the 8% response of the Jewish community, we do have a wide-spanning anti-Zionist Jewish community that is up in arms about not being included in these conversations, especially during the Royal Commission, and their experiences of what they've endured as legitimate forms of harm as a result of speaking up about Palestine.
Yeah, and I actually do know of people's careers and jobs suffering, Jewish people, because of advocating and speaking up for Palestinian people and what they're enduring at the hands of the government of Israel. Yeah, and I noticed too in institutions, so there's something in the report about police. So I'll just read it out.
Mm-hmm.
One respondent shared an experience in an urban setting in Victoria, which occurred whilst protesting against the Israeli President Herzog's visit in February 2026, detailing how members of the Zionist group Lions of Zion arrived with weapons, including a knife and baton, and proceeded to physically and verbally assault multiple protesters. Whilst the incident was reported to the police, no further mm-hmm. actions by the police were reported in this instance. So that's the institution of our police.
Oh, yeah, and this is just one of many incidents where respondents did report to the Victoria Police or elsewhere across the country about these experiences, and no further due process was carried out based on the respondents' experiences and what they relayed in the register. And it goes to show the form of an institutional and procedural lack of recognising how harmful these incidents are and how widespread. We've had incidents of people's homes being damaged, and incidents of individuals being attacked or vilified or having things thrown onto their private residences, having to actually move as a result of this. So changing their entire lifestyle and entire neighbourhood and, you know, people that they know and community as a result of this harm.
Because
without
they don't
any actual...
Sorry,
go ahead.
I was going to say, they don't feel safe. That's what I was going
exactly.
to say.
Exactly.
It's terrible. So there was another story stood out for me in the report. It was about stalking. And again, it's a story of no repercussions and people mm-hmm. being led to feel unsafe. So this one, an Israeli Zionist male with status in the arts field here in Australia and in Israel has made my life hell. He lives not far from where I live and actively stalked me from approximately the beginning of 2024. He initially stood outside my home in the back lane, which backs onto my bedroom and backyard area. He would appear whenever I went out. It was almost like he had surveillance on me 24/7, as he seemed to know when I was leaving home. After the victim reported to the police, So after the victim reported to police, they were told the perpetrator was cautioned, in inverted commas. And the victim added, "The Israeli male still comes out of his place and stares at me if I am walking in the street. He has also filmed myself and friends with me as we go past." That's shocking. And no repercussions.
Absolutely. And it's terrifying to witness and it's terrifying to hear these stories. But this is why we are doing this critical work, that people, institutions, those in leadership need to make a difference in addressing these harms. It's quite confounding. Some of the impacts that we've seen, like you've just mentioned, the stalking, the physical and verbal assaults, the job loss. We've even had university students reporting suspension or expulsion from their usual learning activities, among other deeply harmful impacts.
Yeah, and so can you tell us about, it's really shocking, can you tell us about some of the impacts of anti-Palestinian racism in people's lives?
Yeah, absolutely. So one respondent expressed that they were fearful of any further repercussions on their lives, and have stopped showing external support for Palestine, which in itself is very dangerous, right?
Yeah, politically. People are politically being silenced, that your advocacy for people of Palestine aren't legitimate.
Yep, absolutely.
And if you are suffering because of expressing your political beliefs and advocacy, you're fair game and no one is going to protect you or keep you safe.
Exactly, and it creates a sense of harm and unsafety, like you're saying. I mean, we found out that 29% of the respondents practiced self-censorship, and that is a harm on critical thought, a harm on community building, a harm on advocacy, a harm on just the entire social landscape. We had people express that they were made to feel unwelcome in their community. Mm. We've had people be excluded. For us, really, there was also some deeply concerning mental and emotional distress that this has caused. We've seen that 46% of the respondents reported feeling that they were fearful. Similar averages reported hypervigilance and anxiety. We also had 24% of respondents say that they were withdrawing or isolating themselves from activities or people. Mm. That's how visceral this harm of anti-Palestinian racism is. There's been reports of depression, insomnia, and even worsening of other health conditions were some of the impacts. And it goes to show how there is a psychosocial, socioeconomic, and community-based harm that is being occurring to individuals within the Palestinian community, within the entire community across this continent.
Well, there's different modes of resistance and survival. And when people go to being a small target, it's very well known with oppressed people, is they get to a point where they put their head down, don't make themselves too prominent, try to be a bit invisible. And that's, I guess, ties in with that idea of withdrawing and isolating.
Yeah.
And which has, as you say, it has psychological effects for the person, but it has political effects as well. And it actually also serves to make anti-Palestinian racism not just less legitimate, but less visible. So I guess there's a bit of a cycle that happens because you're punished if you speak up.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so I saw that the report does talk about work effects on work and career, which we talked about before. So I'm just looking at the report. 18% of the respondents experienced loss of employment. That's a lot, or career opportunities. Multiple individuals reported being harassed at work, including one ACT government employee who shared their experience. Suppression and silencing was also experienced in the workplace by various respondents. And, I can see a quote that really illustrates it well. "I was harassed and physically intimidated in my office at ACT government by an Israeli-Australian co-worker for wearing my Kafir, gifted by a Palestinian friend. He repeatedly invaded my personal space as I backed away while spewing out racist and Islamophobic comments. And then another one, I got told off for wearing a watermelon brooch to work. It was framed as an issue of psychological safety of Jewish staff members, which is ridiculous. My manager was the person who complained, and I ended up leaving the organisation. I worked in the Victoria Public Service, and there was a lot of repression of solidarity with Palestine going on at that time. So that's terrible. That's two different government workplaces, ACT and Victoria.
That's correct. And there's multiple others as well, not only in the public sector, but as well as in the private sector. And it kind of shows again, you know, there's a core suppression of political, cultural or community expression, and sort of differential standards are being applied in the workplaces. And when we're looking at anti-discrimination laws, and we're looking at cultural policies and DEI policy, the question is, if it's okay to wear cultural symbols, why is it specific to Palestinian symbols that it's always a form of restriction, removal or cancellation that we're facing, particularly in the workplace?
Well, exactly. I always think it's so ironic that when certain types of racism are elevated as being more important than others, that's actually a form of racism in itself.
100%.
Which is ridiculous.
100%. And so that's why we're constantly looking at anti-Palestinian racism within the lens of a holistic framework. So we acknowledge that, you know, the Australian Human Rights Commission has done some really great work on racism at uni and just a general report on what people are experiencing in racism as a whole in the country. And there's you know, quite interestingly, that we're seeing similar patterns and in line with what we're finding in our research. And so when we're talking about, you know, actually doing the work, we're looking at working with sovereign Indigenous conceptions of diversity, solidarity and care, that will actually develop alternative policies to what we're experiencing now in the workplace, in the public sphere, and really to better grasp that diversity and difference rather than current social cohesion policies that are not bringing us together but are tearing us apart.
Yes, well, we've seen a lot of division, which we talked about on the program last week when the Israel flag was put on the Opera House. And then there were protests after that, and my co-host Jacques commented, this is a sort of division when governments take sides, that some one group of people is more important than another, that their hurt or their suffering is more important than another group, and the government publicly takes sides. This is the sort of divisiveness, the divisions that you see happening, which is the opposite to what governments should be doing, obviously.
Exactly. And I think first and foremost, because we are on unceded territories, we really need to look at the First Nations injustice that's happening and how we can address racism against Indigenous First Nations folks before prioritising settler colonial communities here on this land. But again, it's a holistic process that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
And how we take that on is, you know, speaking up and talking about it and, you know, reporting and incidents and changing policy. Yeah.
And I noticed you mentioned universities as an example as well, just going back to institutional sites. And so there are, we've heard about this in the past, students being suspended or expelled or being removed from their normal learning activities because of speaking up or protesting on behalf of Palestinian people, and then getting some pro-Israel Jewish students complaining that they feel threatened and unsafe because they think it's anti-Semitic to advocate for the Palestinian people, and with their hurt being elevated obviously above that of the Palestinian people who are going through a genocide. as we know, right. As we know from international legal rulings and genocide scholars, including Israeli genocide scholars. So to just go to another quote, someone on a campus says, "A Jewish man attacked me during my graduation ceremony because I was wearing a kufiya. He was accusing me of blood libel and that I was somehow responsible for the Bondi attack. He wanted me to remove my kufiya, which I refused." So that's really an example. And I guess really underpins the need for our institutions and our governments to really rise above this and promote or work against anti-racism or discrimination against all groups equally.
Absolutely. Specifically to the university aspect, what we're witnessing now is a further subjugation and silencing, particularly with the policies surrounding, you know, the new hate speech laws and the anti-Semitism education task forces. We all know that last year, or I think it was last year, Universities Australia adopted, multiple universities adopted the Universities Australia definition of anti-Semitism. What's harmful about these definitions is that they conflate criticism of a country and its policies with anti-Semitism. So to do that is not only harmful to critical thought and academic expression and intellectual freedoms, but it also causes more harm towards the Jewish community as well. Mm. But what, going back to students experiencing anti-Palestinian racism, there's been multiple reports even prior to the launch of this register where students were surveilled, their movements were tracked on campus. We found that quite a number of students have been either expelled or suspended from their studies. Students expressing feeling unsafe for physically being attacked on campus, yet there's been no response. Some students, unfortunately, received some death threats and rape threats. So this is how far-reaching this is and how deeply impactful this is on our student body that are either of a Palestinian or non-Palestinian background but are advocating for Palestinian rights.
Yes, it's really shocking. I am conscious we're very, very close to the end of our program. Yeah. But I will remind listeners, we did interview Nick Reimer about that definition of anti-Semitism on universities a while ago. And I'll put the link on our program page. Are there any things listeners can do to help eliminate anti-Palestinianism? If you can tell us really quickly, and I will put links on our program page.
I shall do. So on the individual level, do not be afraid. Anti-Palestinianism is very real and it's very harmful. But if we don't speak up about it, it can fester. So if you've experienced anti-Palestinian racism, utilise the complaints process available in workplaces, healthcare and education sectors. Report incidents of those violence and also report to the Anti-Palestinian Racism Register on www.combat-apr.com. If we're able to document and persistently say that this is an acceptable behaviour, we're actually putting those in leadership positions on notice for effective policy and procedural changes to protect us all.
Thank you so much, Noor, for finishing that up so succinctly. And I will put links on the program page. And thanks for your great work that you're doing with this. It's really very much needed for all the reasons that we've talked about during this program. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Think Again live on 3CR Community Radio today. If you want to contact us or give us feedback, you can email borderlands@borderlandscooperative.net. Our programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and on the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. And we'll finish with Milk Umana by King Stingray.
Malabukma, yolngo kapalanda, kodari anangali wangajiri. One day we'll come together and sit down by the fire. Man, I got no reason to rush. I never lose touch. What kind of man do you think I am?
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.